Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 54 of Crosshairs Radio. This is another They Don't Do That in Europe with Scott Diedenbach and David Palin. On today's episode, we talk about the World Cup race that happened in Germany, which was Zeven. We also talk about the Hama DVV race. We talk about bar brawls and much more. But before we get into that, I want to take a second to thank our sponsors for today's show. We have a returning sponsor, Cantu Cycling Wheels. This is a small hand-built wheel building operation down in Texas. They offer high-end wheels that you can get not only at an affordable price, but also with the confidence at knowing that you are getting not a machine-built wheel, but somebody who is taking the care to make sure you're getting exactly what you want to the specifications that you want that are going to last a long time. Great people to work with. Go to CantuWheels.com. Check them out. Check out their what do we got here? 55T, Cantu 55T, the cyclocross wheel. Looks pretty amazing. Nice deeper dish wheel for you. You can get all kinds of different spoke configurations depending on your style of racing and also your build. And even though we are a cyclocross podcast, they sell all kinds of wheels here. You don't have to just buy the cyclocross ones. They got road triathlon wheels, mountain wheels, anything that you need. I mean, cyclocross sort of coming to an end. If you're looking for good training wheels or racing wheels, go visit CantuWheels.com. You can also give them a follow on Twitter at Cantu_wheels. Let them know you heard about them on Crosshairs Radio, then go hit them up and buy yourself a set of hoops. Also, once again, we have another returning sponsor. This one is Bike Kinetic Cross. This is a race that's happening December 11th out in Haymarket, Virginia. You can go to bikereg.com, our favorite bicycle registration website. You can search for Bike Kinetic 6. That's B-I-K-E-N-E-T-I-C-X. Sign up for the race and come on out and hang out. This is going to be an awesome time. They have a pirate ship. I said this last time, but it cannot be emphasized enough. There is a pirate ship, and there is an update on the pirate ship. There is now going to be a beer garden on top of the pirate ship. It is Caboose Brewing. They're sponsoring the Moore Beer Garden. Proceeds go to Moore. That is our mountain bike advocacy trail building organization here in the Mid-Atlantic. So you can drink a Caboose Brewing beer and also give money to a good cause. So that's awesome. Happy Humps. Those are these little things that they throw a lot of giveaways on top of. So even if you're not winning your race, you can still walk away with some prizes. Lots of berms, lots of drop-ins, a couple short run-ups, equal payouts for men and women. Let's all go to this race. Let's all have fun. It's the last race of the year in the Mid-Atlantic, at least up in the DC region. We'll see you out there at Haymarket. Go to Bike Kinetic Cross on Bike Reg. Sign up, and we'll see you December 11th. WideAnglePodium.com. Go. Sign up. Become a member. I'm going to say it every time. A lot of y'all are doing it. Would love to get even more of you in there. It's been going great. We've been building that up, but always good to get more people in there to help us do what we're doing here on Crosshairs Radio. Feedback at cxhairs.com. That's where you can get a hold of me. Would love to hear from more of you. If you get the chance, go to iTunes, rate, review, do all that kind of good stuff. Some cool reviews on there. Thank you very much for doing that. Follow along CX Hairs on Instagram and Twitter, and that's about it. TDDTIE, you know what that means. It means that Scott Diedenbach is about to take over the show, and he is going to do that right now.
All right, welcome back to another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. With me, as always, on the right, Mr. David Palin.
I called in early to make sure I got on the right this time.
And with us, as usual, down to just the three stooges, I guess, Bill Shiken. Bill,
hey, what's up? How are you? You can call in early and reserve a spot?
Yeah. That's it. David called me half an hour, like at 9 o'clock this morning.
I camped out the day before. It's like going to bed.
I was hoping that you guys just were going to do this together, like, you know, over breakfast.
Yeah. That's funny. So, hey guys, how are you guys doing? Awesome. Ready to talk about some cyclocross?
Yeah, I think that's what we're here for. Yeah.
You know what? Before we talk about the great European racing that we had this weekend, Bill, you had an awesome article on the website about the Ed Sander Memorial Cyclocross race.
Yes.
Tell us about that, man. I read that and it was like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah, it was. I posted up there a couple weeks ago. It's one of the oldest races that we have in the what I'm now calling the Southern Mid-Atlantic, since nobody really knows where the Mid-Atlantic is. So the DC region. It takes place at it is an aquatic garden. So they sell, you know, plants and stuff, but they have all these lily ponds. That's the main feature of it. You're actually racing through the lily ponds, and it is in honor of a former employee who was on National Capital Velo Club, which is probably the biggest racing club / team in the DC area, NCVC. He died several years back, and this race is in his honor. And it started as a fundraiser for his son, for his education. And this race has put his son Chris through college. He's now a senior, runs cross country. You know, great kid.
So awesome.
And yeah, and just the proceeds of this race, to the point that it is now a scholarship fund for other kids in similar situations who've lost
lost
a parent. And it just, why I put that up there, it's on cxhairs.com, was just because I went out there, and you know, one thing, it was just like I used to play photographer a lot more and don't, and I announce all these races, but I just sort of slipped away and took some pictures and just had a really, it was just such a great vibe. And I think that we have that a lot in this region, and I'm sure wherever you race, it's that you feel the same, you know, connection to your,
sure,
to your scene that you have there. And for us, it was just a good reminder. I was just sort of reflecting on it. It was a good reminder of why I like grassroots racing. And especially for us, I mean, and you know, we've gotten to a point, and Scott, you're going to all the C1 races. You have a team, you know, you're working with a team that's up there and has these pro and you know, women who are aspiring to be pro riders, and it's a different level. And it was just good to get back. Mm-hmm. And you guys, I know you had similar feelings with like Matt Anthony and races like that. You get back to it and you go, this is why I love this.
Yeah,
you know, it's the racing is fun, but it's also the community. It's the people that that are my people. That's my scene. You
right.
know, and it's like it's hanging out, it's having a good time. It truly is people racing and then, you know, watching other races. It didn't hurt that it was a beautiful day. It didn't hurt that they have Three Stars Brewery, which is an awesome beer sponsor. you know, but it was just that sense of community, and then also that greater purpose that, you know, you're racing, you're having fun. You know, they in the past have had a raffle. They'd give away a bike frame every year, you know, and that kind of stuff. And it was just a reminder of, other than crushing yourselves in training, getting in shape, wanting to do well in your race, wanting to do well in your series, wanting to upgrade, all the things that makes racing fun and competitive and compelling, it's the community on top of that. And that's what always, you know, makes me really excited about this time of year.
Yeah. Speaking of, just great. And it's great that it's been that successful, and that's what makes it so awesome. And like you said, you know, we have the same feeling here around Matt Anthony. And you mentioned the raffle though. David, do you remember the raffle at Matt Anthony?
Yeah. Oh man.
So we had a raffle, local bike shop, Sweet Bikes, run by a friend of ours, Seth Kleinglass. And, they raffled off a Colnago, right?
Right.
That
was a Wout's bike, right?
Yeah.
it has the same Colnago label on it.
Yeah. And but it was so cool because this is, like you said, Bill, you know, this good feeling that you get. So this whole group, it was at the end. You had to be there to win it. So it helped keep people there till the very end, you know, and there's a big crowd all gathered around. And the first like two names they drew, the person was already gone. And the third name they drew and who won it was this young girl. And I was like, oh my God, that's so awesome. You know,
nice.
That,
yeah.
Of all these people, we have this young girl, maybe this will spark, you know, more interest in her for riding or racing. And she didn't even realize that she won the bike. She thought
that
it was like
the best part of it.
She thought it was like some little prize or something. And she's waiting for it. And Seth is like, no, if you come to the shop, we'll, you know, we'll get you set up, figure out what size you need and we'll get it ordered. And she's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did I win? He's like, yeah, you won a version of this bike race. She was like, oh my God.
That is awesome.
So yeah, it was just so cool that a young girl like that won that, or any young person winning it would have been cool. So, all right, guys, well, let's get on talking about the European races that we have. No big races in the U.S. that we're going to talk about this week, but two pretty big races, pretty big race weekend in Europe, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Hey, do you want to, because this was part of our viewer mail, I realize they're not viewers, that we had was a question about why no one, what's up promoters, why nobody has a Thanksgiving UCI race.
Sure. And do you want to tackle that?
Sure, I'll tackle it. Who the hell wants to promote a race during Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. It's not like you do nothing up until Saturday,
yeah.
Right? It basically takes your whole week or 2 weeks before that you are basically gone from your schedule. And it's a real tough thing to do. So,
and I understand it. I understand that people are off work. I understand that, you know, you look at the NFL and things like that, and oh, isn't it great that you have like these, you know, things to take you away from having to talk to your family and you can go watch a football game. but it's like, we're not the NFL. You know,
yeah,
this is,
they are
even at our finger quote pro level for racing in the U.S., it is still all volunteers.
Right. One of the top NFL players' salary would finance the entire cyclocross season in the U.S.
Right.
One player. So that's the reality. So
yeah. And then there's also the other pieces of it, right? That because there's the NFL and all these other distractions, you know, as much as I'd like to say that we've got people dedicated to us and would rather come to a UCI race than to sit at home and watch TV, the reality is the NFL is still king in the sports world.
Yeah, but I'm not even saying like Thanksgiving Day, but even that weekend, you know, and
yeah,
I will say as an exception, you know, we did have that is always for the Mid-Atlantic, talking a lot about Mid-Atlantic today, Mid-Atlantic Bike Racing Association, our cyclocross championship race and our state championship races are the weekend of Thanksgiving. So if all of these UCI level racers really are chomping at the bit to race, they can always go to Tiny Town, Pennsylvania, Maryland, right on the Pennsylvania border, and race the Mobra Cyclocross championship race.
Absolutely.
And
what I mean, it's a perfect
locally,
opportunity.
Scott, and you've put up videos of this race as well locally. That's DICX, the Detroit Invitational Cyclocross Weekend.
Exactly.
An unsanctioned crazy race at
an
the
unsanctioned marshmallow throwing.
Yep.
That Tawny Town race is very interesting, Bill. I'm considering that for next year.
Okay, we'll see you there.
That's gonna be his first race racing again.
Yeah. I want to go and check that out. So, anyways,
much better if it's muddy. I will tell you that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Even better. Which is true about most races.
That's true. That is true.
So we had on Saturday, November 26th, we had a World Cup that actually came off this time in Zeven, Germany. What did you guys think? First of all, I think I tweeted out while we were watching it that at first I wasn't crazy about the course, but as the racing went on, I kind of was really enjoying just the general overall feel of the course and how the riders were going around the course. What did you guys think? Bill, I think I know what you thought.
Well, I had the same thought when I first saw the course. I was like, all right, that doesn't look too exciting. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of Helen Wyman calls American style racing with a lot of turns and a lot of corners and a lot of grass. But they actually put that sand section in late. You know, that was a late addition to the course, and that was it. That was a huge factor in both races.
Oh, absolutely.
So that was a good addition. It turned out that that one section that had some elevation was looked really hard. And all in all, I liked it. I thought it was a great course. You know, if we're comparing it to other non-Belgian UCI races in Europe, so Italy or France.
Then
it definitely took the prize for the best non-Belgian or Netherlands European. Can I modify this anymore? UCI World Cup.
That's held on a Saturday.
That's held on a Saturday.
I completely agree. David, did you have any thoughts on it?
Based on, and I know Bill tweeted it out there, like even the race description. That the promoter, and I use that word kind of lightly, promoter.
Organizer? Organizer,
right? Yeah. Race director as opposed to race promoter. And he put out, you know, there will be some grass, some hills, a bridge.
It was like a lot of grass and a little hill, I think was their description of their course.
Yeah.
So it wasn't,
and they hit that hill several times, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same hill. Yeah. But still, I thought it was cool. Like I said, at the beginning of the women's race, I was kind of wondering. By the time the men's race was going on, I was kind of digging it a little bit. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go on. Let's give some results. I'm going to start with the juniors just to, you know, talk about the juniors. One thing I want to mention in first place for the juniors, we had Jelle Kamps. Second place was Tone Vandebosch, and third place was Thomas Pidcock. Also, I want to mention in seventh place was a rider named Ben Turner. So between Ben and Thomas in third and seventh, that's two British riders in the junior field in the top 10.
And
I think that was worth mentioning for sure.
Pidcock's having a season.
Yeah, man. I mean, I haven't looked lately, but definitely someone who's been in the running all season long, and really cool to see two British. I mean, we've seen we've had Evie Richards on the women's side, but on the men's side, to see two young British guys in there mixing it up is very cool to see.
Well, I mean, Pidcock, European champion. And also, when we get to Hama, he crushed that race. So
yes.
So, a British cyclocross star, male British cyclocross star.
Yeah, right? That would be awesome.
Not since Roger Simon Hammond,
Bernie, right? Oh, Roger.
okay. Well, let's move on to the U23 results. In first, I'm going to give top five for U23.
We should not. I'm feeling bad already for Ian Field. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Oops.
I was going to throw that out there.
Sergeant letters coming, people.
we're not forgetting you, Ian. Okay.
Yeah. U23 in first place was Joris Neuenhaus, I think is probably how it's pronounced. Second place, Eli Easerbeet. Third place, friend of the show, Quentin Hermans. Fourth place, Gioli Bertolini. Guess what nationality he is. And in fifth place, Nicholas Klepa. I think is how it's probably pronounced.
It is now.
For the Americans in the U23, 26 was Eric Bruner and 39 was Spencer Petroff. Eli Easerbeet getting second place. We've talked about, you know, him a lot this year. I think one of the things that you can talk about with Easerbeet this year is you see somebody, I think it's a good example of how, as you progress in any nation, in the U.S. or wherever, from the juniors up into the elites, how much more difficult it gets. Because Easerbeet, of course, dominates as a junior, comes into the U23. He's still one of the top riders, no question about it, but certainly not dominating like he was at a junior. And I think it's a good example of how, as you step up in this sport, it becomes more and more difficult as you go. Agree? Disagree? What do you guys think?
Well, it's interesting because he's still pretty much racing the same guys.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some guys in the 21, 22 year old range there. But I think it's interesting. I don't know if other guys raise their game or if just the level of commitment starts to fade for some. But, I mean, he's still 1-2. It is a cyclocross race. It's not, and he never dominated in quite the way that you know, ride away from the field kind of domination.
Yeah, and it's also, I think you're right looking at those ages. It's almost, because this is his first year in the U23, so yeah, you're exactly right, Sky. You expect that there are going to be some older guys in there, but at a certain point, the age, you know, and maturity seems to level out as far as importance goes. And if you're really good, you're not staying in that U23 field. I mean, look at Lawrence Swick last year. It was like old man Swick, you know, still racing in the U23s where everybody else was, you know, and I think he went back and forth where everybody else had already made that decision that they're just his age were racing in the elites, you know, because he's in that Vanderpool Van Aert class.
Yeah. I think, too, it's a good lesson for young riders who, you know, if they're racing at some level within their age group and maybe they're not quite getting the results that they want and they get frustrated about it. And you got to just keep telling them, just keep at it, keep at it. A year, the difference between one season to a next to the next, especially when you're young, can be huge. You know, we've seen over and over again where young riders you go from 1 year being, you know, mid packers, and then a year goes by and just something happens. Everything starts to click with them. Their bike handling all of a sudden clicks in. They get a lot stronger over the course of one off season, you know, because they're still young and maturing, and all of a sudden, boom, they make a huge jump up. So I think it's a good lesson to just keep at it, stick with it, and good things will happen.
Yeah. The one,
I'm still waiting.
It'll happen, David. As I said, the maturity still has to happen in some riders. So, you know, there's time.
Yeah,
it'll come.
The one thing about Easer Beat as well, and it's sort of will be interesting. There's no way to tell. There's absolutely no way to tell if this is going to be a factor or not in his career. But, you know, go back to what Sven said when he lost him and he wasn't, you know, able to sign him, that he said that he still needed a few years of development and that he was hoping that he would have had the opportunity to work with him on Telenet. And it looks like that's what Sven is doing with these riders. I mean, you look at Quentin Hermans, you look at Jens Adams, who we're going to talk about a lot coming up.
Sure.
You know, building these skills, building these techniques, and is this something that Easerbeat maybe is missing now?
Yeah, so I agree. It'll be interesting to see. So anyways, I just thought that was something to talk about for the U23s. I wish we could have seen that more of that race. Did you happen to get to see it, Bill, or anything?
No, I mostly U23s this year have just been seeing those highlights.
Very difficult. So, all right. Well, moving on to a race we did get to watch, the Elite Women. This is, of course, still the race in Zeven we're talking about. In first place for the Elite Women, Sané Kant. Second place, Katie Compton. Third place, Alice Marie Arzufi. Fourth place, Sophie DeBoer. Fifth place, Thalita De Jong. For the Americans, 11th place was Ella Noble, 24th place was Amanda Nauman, 32nd place was Elle Anderson, and 47th place was Christine Vardaros.
Just so, to preempt those, the Twitters, the tweets, and the emails and phone calls, Ella Noble was in 10th place.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have written. I don't.
Yeah, but she was
know,
she was racing like she was turning up to 11.
That's true.
Yeah, so I hand write these, and I've just wrote 11 down. So okay, so what an awesome race, you guys! What did you think?
It was, I mean, it was right down to the finish. And those of you who follow the race on Twitter and watching crosshairs and others tweeting back and forth, it was all about that sand pit, or it was believed to be all about that sand pit, with it. Kind of, I wouldn't call it a coin toss because it's not that at all. It comes down to position, training, skill, all that. But Katie Compton and Sané Kant just really putting on a show.
Bill,
yeah,
Here
will be my comment. I thought that Compton was faster through the sand. I think that's debatable. I think that Sané Kant definitely was right up there, her equal in the sand. The other part of the course that really made a difference, Compton was probably a little stronger actually getting up the hills. And that's where she was able to push her lead a little bit. How the race sort of broke down before we even got to that, you had Sophie DeBoer and Talita DeJong, who actually went out fast to the front. And I think all of us were looking at DeJong thinking, well, there we go. This is going to be another one for the world champion who's just going to be riding away. And especially on this course, you know, which seems to be one that would play to her strengths, you know, a fast course, you know, a lot of power. But I think maybe all those turns may have been her demise. Yeah, so eventually Kant works out there. Katie Compton, a slower start. It's, you know, there's somebody going back and forth on Twitter about, well, you know, she burned too many matches working her way through the field, and that's why she didn't have it at the end. I 100% disagree with that. I think that she may not have had the best start, but the field isn't huge, and Compton is enough of a pro to be able to sort of mete out her efforts to get to where she needs to be at the end. And it was a pretty, you know, I think they were both on the top of their game in those last couple laps when they're going head-to-head, Kant and Compton. When it came down to that sand section, you know, if you look back, and that's where I sort of made the comment, it was like, look, Compton's riding it. Kant had to get off her bike. And that's what I thought was going to be the difference. You come around the next lap, maybe thinking about that, but Sonny Kant makes a really nice move around the pits, pretty tight pass, is able to put in that effort, good handling, gets around Compton right after that, gets into the sand, and is able to ride it clean while Compton isn't, dismounts about three quarters of the way through the sand. That opened up the gap. That was the winning move. So the winning move, actually, that pass to get in front, because if Compton was ahead and she dismounted, Kant has to dismount too, and then they are, you know, side by side coming down the sprint.
And even if Compton doesn't dismount, if she's in front, she gets to choose her line, and Kant may be able to stay on her bike, may not, but she's got to power through whatever she has and doesn't have so much of the choice of line. I think that that was the move prior to the sand.
Yeah, it's just being in front because you control it. Yep. If something goes wrong, you know, you're going to stop the person behind you. If something doesn't go wrong, then you're going to be able to have that jump at the end. Yeah.
Right.
I agree completely. I think both races this weekend really opened my eyes a little bit more to how smart of a rider Sonny Kant is. Yep. You guys agree?
Yeah.
I totally agree with what you're saying, Bill. I thought Compton looked stronger. When Compton catches her, I thought Compton's going to catch her, go around her, and be able to drop her. That did not happen. Kant sits on her wheel, waits till the last lap, wants to be first into the sand, makes her move, gets in front of her, is first into the sand. And like you say, Bill, that was the move to get in front of her is probably the winning move of the race, and then is able to hold on to win. I thought it was an incredibly smart race by Sonny Kant and completely deserved, as well as a huge effort by Katie Compton. Awesome race by her coming back, and, you know, first race back in Europe, and just an awesome effort to see what she did too, as far as working her way through the pack. So I just thought the women's race was amazing.
Yeah, and
that's it. That's it.
Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, I meant to say David.
Go ahead, David. That's it, Katie Compton. When you look at last year. In the last couple of years, even, her racing in Europe, the fact that we're talking about her the way we should have been able to talk about her in past years, the last couple of years, it's so great to see how powerful she is again and what a force she is again. Now that she's gotten her thing straightened out, whether it was dietary or whatever, that she is a factor. I remember talking just last year about, Katie's starts are poor. And then she was out of the race from the start. Here she has a quote-unquote poor start, and it's more of almost a tactic. She sits in and then decides and races her race and is right there at the finish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think if Katie Compton's going on cross results and looking at her nemesis from Milton Keynes to this race, you know, we now have two editions of some pretty epic racing between Sonny Kant and Katie Compton coming down to the wire. The interesting thing about Kant is that You know, she was responding to people saying, hey, it's finally good to see Kant racing at top form. And I think, David, you were the one that saw or was able to hear her post-race interview where she kind of refuted that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. She kind of had made a comment of, you know, saying that people were doubting and saying that I wasn't going to be able to hold it when the American, in her words, and the road racer were here, and yet I proved them wrong. And I think that it's a little extra fire in her belly as well, which can be a dangerous thing for everyone.
Well, yeah. And didn't she follow it up by saying that her main goal is the world championship, so this isn't even her top form?
Yeah. Yep.
But I think you could say the same thing about Compton.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. But I like it. Yeah. It's good. It's good. They're getting a nice rivalry going, and I think it's going to set the stage well for Luxembourg.
I agree. Yeah. Also, I just wanted to mention in the results that we mentioned in third place, Alice Marie Arzufi from Italy, 23 years old. Very impressive. And the top U23 racer at number 8 was Laura Verdonschot from Belgium. So 8th place overall, top U23 women in that field. So
yeah, and this was, you know, going back to that first World Cup win for Sonny Kant, which means that Sophie DeBoer still hanging on for loosely to that
with the overall,
the overall World Cup. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
With the 4th place there. So yeah, and one thing
for those interested, and I know everyone is, Katie Compton still strongly in on the top of the women's Pro CX calendar here in the U.S. And I know that's a big goal.
Sorry,
Michael Rice.
All right. Is that anything, any other comments or observations about the elite women? Are we good?
We're good.
Moving on, elite men's race. In first place was Matthew Vanderpoel. Second place, Wout van Aert. Third place, Kevin Powels. Fourth place, Tom Musen. Fifth place, Clement Venturini from France. Americans in 30th place was Stephen Hyde. In 47th place was Jeremy Powers. Basically, Matthew Vanderpoel is the man.
Yeah.
Anything else we need to say about that?
Well,
did he ride here from Spain to as his warm up ride or something? Or? No, I think that's what's coming out now. That's why he didn't race across Vegas in Iowa, because he couldn't figure out how to ride his bike across the pond.
Probably true.
And though you jest, David.
Yes,
pretty dominant performance from Matthew Vanderpoel.
Well, yes. even more impressive if you go back to the start of the race, you know, a couple things. One, he got caught off guard by how fast the lights went to green. So he did not get off the line real well. And I watched and I couldn't really tell. The way it was described was that he broke several spokes going through the sand the first time. Watching it, he has a little problem with the U-turn thing, sort of at the end of the end of the sand section.
Hey, the sand ended before the turn.
You're right. Okay. It's all all up to stuff. It probably was. But anyway, he's making that turn. He got a little tight. May have gotten, you know, stuck in somebody's wheel. But definitely got held up in the sand. And then he just said he couldn't downshift. So he was sort of stuck in a gear and had to ride that out to the pits.
So he had broken spokes and couldn't shift at the same time?
He was saying he couldn't.
Gave him the single speed bike.
Yeah, well, he was saying he was scared to shift because he didn't want to throw his rear derailleur So by the time he came through the line after the first lap, it was about a 15-second deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And that front group was just motoring along. It took him a couple laps. It was Mason and Wout van Aert. Mason looking strong. I mean, he's able to stick
Hanging with those guys, man.
Yes,
with,
he was.
You know, with Wout. And then eventually, cue the jaw theme. It's here comes Matthew Vanderpoel just cutting that lead every lap. And he, you know, didn't even stop for a hello by the time he got to the front, just kept going. And by the time it was over, had what, like a half minute lead on everyone.
Yeah, and that's after he kind of turned it off. I mean, he was just riding safe by the end.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows what he could have won by if he was pushing hard.
Yeah. So, yeah, so. Just, I mean, you know, he's saying now he's feeling pretty good and wants to maintain this form for Flanders and Perry. No, for the world championship race. And, yeah. And you know, we had a question as well. We can sort of work these questions in there about what's wrong with Wout Van Aert? I think was pretty much the question, and I think it's pretty easy to answer that nothing is wrong with Wout Van Aert.
He's
still
Wout,
finishing
me,
second.
Yeah.
He's still gapping the rest of the field. It just turns out that there's somebody who's coming into form right now who. He needs to figure out how to solve.
Go ahead, David.
I think it's going to be really cool as Wout becomes more tactical in his racing, because I think that's his, I wouldn't say only chance, but his best chance against Matthew Van Der Poel is figuring out when I need to be in front of him going into a sand pit, as we learned in the women's race. And where can I certainly not chop anyone in corners, but where can I throttle him down a little bit and use my skills as a strength, as opposed to just trying to race him on a full out power race?
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, like, it's like what Wout has said at the end of this weekend, where obviously, you know, we'll get to the next race soon, but we know what happened there too, basically the same one too. But, and Wout's like, look, there's nothing to panic about. I'm going to take the races one at a time. And I think, like, remember, this is the same kind of feeling we had going into Worlds last year. Everybody said Matthew Van Der Poel is going to walk away with the world championship for a second year in a row. And that did not happen for a lot of reasons. I think part of it is some of which he maybe showed us this weekend that he is more able to handle that. But, you know, we know what happened with the foot in the wheel at Worlds, this crazy thing. Van Der Poel rides more with his emotions on his sleeve, I think, than Wout. Wout is much more controlled and technical in his thinking and was able to come back from that at Worlds last year, where Van Der Poel wasn't as easily able to come back from that. So anything like that can happen. Maybe this is a sign with Matthew having these mechanicals and still being able to, you know, okay, just ride through that, you know, get his new bike and then go on and still win by a large margin. Maybe he is better at that than he was last year, but there's all kinds of stuff that can happen. So I think there's nothing to fret about with Wout, and we're still going to see great racing between these two guys between now and the end of the season. Bill?
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that's it. You know, and it's something that we like, and it's another, you know, another question that we got that we can talk about. And what we've talked about in the past is just that they are great foils for each other, that, you know, you have the sort of conservative tactical racer versus the more showy, just flying by the seat of his pants. And that's going to make for great racing. I think that Wout will be just fine. You know, one, just to follow up on Van Der Poel's interview after this race, he's not sure he's in the best shape he's ever been answering that question. He may be able to get even faster.
Which is
so
scary.
Yeah. It is. But the question was that we had, and again, if you all want to get in on this, feedback@cxairs.com, you can send us your questions and comments, and we will most likely get to most, if not all of them, during these podcasts. But was just with his, you know, racking up these wins and also sort of his flair that he shows. Yeah, is Matthew Van Der Poel the Peter Sagan of cyclocross?
Oh, that's a David question.
Oh, I knew that was going to come down to me. You know, I think he does dominate one sport and then go race in another little piece of it, or wants to race another little piece of it and come back.
Their mountain bike careers were about the same this year.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. I think that Matthew shaved his legs early in the season. So he's got that different little bit shorter hair. But other than that, I think that what they do have in common, what I like about it, and Scott, you allude to it a little bit, is the passion or the sense of, this is still fun for him.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the biggest parallel you can make between the two of them, is they both ride and have fun while they're racing.
I think they're both.
I agree.
I like that, watching them race, and I think why a lot of people like them in their style is that they're instinctive racing.
You know, yeah, that's a great word.
It's not, oh, this is the tactically where I should do this or where I shouldn't do that. You know, you watch. And he's definitely gotten smarter about it and knows how to win races now. But yeah, you definitely look at Sagan on some of his winning moves and you're like, why is he doing that now?
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly in some of the racing he did in France, is like, that's not smart. Why? Right. You know, that's, and yet he still has the power to do what he wants.
You know, and people and the fans love it. I think you could also, you know, that's why I believe so many fans loved Thomas Voeckler too. Same kind of stuff, you know. He would just do stuff that you're like, what is he doing? And then he'd make it work, you know.
Yeah.
And people
yeah.
like watching that.
Even with Vanderpoel, you know, what we'll talk about in a second in the next race, he's like, yeah, it probably wasn't smart to go out, you know, and then have to sit there and mentally deal with, you know, keeping a lead for 50 minutes. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, from a standpoint of Voeckler, both Vanderpoel and Sagan have better form on a bike. They're a lot easier on the eye to watch race. But that passion piece is there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Was this the race we had the pushing?
Yes.
Yes. You want to talk about the pushing, Bill?
Yeah, we're talking about
a little. There was a Donnybrook that broke.
And this is.
And I think that it's our fault.
By Dave
by
Toll
the way.
Coming through.
And this
whose
is
fault?
This is Hama, and yep. David, our friend, the Alma GP JB, would like you to. He wrote in a question, but mostly he just wrote in the question just so you could pronounce the name of the series for us.
What, Dave Bay?
Yes.
Go look it up, people.
I guess we'll get to the rest. I'll just, before we start this, I know I'm all over the place, but we'll get JB's question in here, which is at the start of the Dave Bay.
Yeah,
exactly. And it says you must make David read that. World Cup and Super Prestige races, the TV shows, the countdown via numbers or a sequence of lights. On the audience side of the truss, do racers see the same thing from their vantage? And if not, what, if anything, is visible on their side of the start truss? That's an easy one. Yes, they see the lights too.
Yeah.
So they get the same sort of countdown that you see. They're seeing that as well. And it's it's basically a drag race. You know, it goes from red all the way down to green, and then they go.
Yep. Okay. So on to the Dave Flandering Cross in Hama. But let's do before we get to the shoving match and all that stuff, because I know, Bill, you got a huge amount of information about that, right?
I got some stuff.
Okay. But let's start at the top. We're going to start with the U23 men. First place, Quentin Hermans. Second place, Eli Easerby. Third place, Adam Topalik. I think first time we've announced his name since Worlds. Fourth place, Nicholas Klepa, I think. And fifth place, Yannick Peters. For the Americans, in 19th place was Eric Bruner, and in 22nd place was Spencer Petroff. Quentin Hermans, great to see him getting that win. I just love watching that guy. We didn't get to see it, but I can't wait to get to see anytime he's racing. Like I said, friend of the show. We have fun with him on Twitter, so great to see that. Bill?
Yeah, no, I think I just going back to that Quentin Ellie rivalry is just an awesome one, and I think it's going to be one that just continues throughout the years. You know, this is what we want in cyclocross. This is Niels and Sven, and this is Wout and Matthew. This is these rivalries that you want to see start to form. And other guys may jump in there as well, but it's good to see those guys going at it in the U23 field. Tupolek, I'm assuming, he was able to see the lap cards and raced to the end.
He raced the same name.
That poor guy is never going to live that down. the guy could win the elite world someday, and they will still bring that up.
Of course, but at least it won't sting as hard if he does win elite world.
He'll be the guy that ends up kicking the winning goal against his own team in the World Cup.
This is a great course. This is one, you know, I think it's probably on YouTube somewhere by now, but I love this course. It's got just these really cool little features. It's got these nice little, you know, sort of squiggly things on off cambers and just, it also has that really long straight off camber that they had a different TV angle on this year that they had in the past. But I think it was 2 years ago where we first saw Vanderpoel's Tokyo Drift prowess.
Yeah, right.
Where he dropped down to a lower line, passed about five guys, and then just drifted back into line around the turn.
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah, back.
And it's got the woven stick fences.
I love those.
Yeah.
I did,
nice.
Too. I know JB has been tweeting about them, but I was noticing that during the race. I'm like, oh, my God, those are so cool.
Is that the Ewok Village?
Ewok Village.
Yeah, Ewok Village.
Or the Ewok Forest. Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you, Bill. This course is really cool. I really enjoyed watching this race. Had a great time. The overall, I just can't stand up. The one thing, the barriers, with the way the course came through those barriers, though, it was, you know, the course is kind of dipped in the center part where most people ride, and then the barriers were crossed, and the barriers, because the edges were higher. Even Wout Van Aert was hopping the barriers.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you went up on the edges, you only had to hop about, right. Like, looked like about 3 or 4 inches maybe to get over them. So that might be something they could reposition or change somehow. But yeah, as a whole, just a great course, and I really enjoyed it.
Here's a quick aside. How many words do cyclocross people have for barriers? Because we heard a new one in the World Cup. Not a new one, but just different.
What
variation.
Was it? What was the new one?
Well, okay, so we got barriers, right?
Barriers, yeah. Planks.
Planks. Hurdles.
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 Was that the new one?
That was that was our I'm blanking on his name now. The announcer for the World Cup, the new announcer for the World Cup.
Yeah, who did a fine job,
by
the way.
He did a fine job. He did a good job.
Yes, I agree. He did a great job. Doing that by yourself is difficult, as we've said many, many times, and I think he did a great job. Hurdles. I'm calling them hurdles from now on.
Hurdles. Yeah.
You know, and I just to come back just for a moment to that, to the announcer comment, before we just kind of gloss over on that, I'd like some people, before you tweet out all your negative comments about this or that announcer, turn down the sound and try to announce a race while you're watching it on YouTube or whatever.
Just try and do it for 5 minutes. Yep. Matt, try and do it for 5 minutes. Matt, and you'll understand.
Matt Payne,
correct.
Matt Payne.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So. Okay, well, let's give elite women's results. In first place was Sané Kant. Second place, Maud Kapgens. Third place, Thalita de Jong. Fourth place, Ellen Van Looy. Fifth place, Paula Havlikova. For the Americans, top American was in 13th place, Elle Anderson. 15th place, Ellen Noble. And 17th place was Amanda Naumann. Now, we mentioned, I was saying earlier about where Sané Kant, how I thought, you know, this weekend as a whole showed how smart she was. I don't know if you guys noticed, but did you notice down that final straight, she did not let up on the gas until she was over the line or very, very, very close to the line. And I'm sure that was because she knows Thalita de Jong is back there.
Right. Yeah.
Don't you
yep.
think? I mean, she knows that she's back there with that power and that road speed. And I'm going all the way to the line and I'm not going to let up at all because, you know, who knows what she could put down all of a sudden. So I think this is another example of Sané Kant just doing little things like that. That you notice that shows she's a very, very intelligent racer. So
yeah, that was,
what
that
did
was
you guys
great,
think? Go ahead.
It was a great race all the way down to the end. I mean, you had a group of what, like six or seven racing the whole time. One thing that I really liked seeing from Kant was there were a couple like tricky dips in there that I think were in years past, and also this one threw off a lot. You see a lot of crashes at this one little section. Kant comes in there really hot, has to nose manual, and then runs into the side the barrier. That's what I'm fencing. But was just super calm about it. Got her bike. Yes. Got back on. Actually started running. Ran back into the field. Got her spacing. You know, got back on, and then was right on it. There was like no panic whatsoever. You know, she was just like confident that she'd able to, you know, regain control and get back into the race. So that was cool to see. And then also just, you know, taking the chance at the end to get ahead and then making the race and really winning from a pack.
Yes, agreed. I you said exactly what I was thinking. So, David, anything you want to say about the women's race?
I mean, I think it's cool to see. Well, Ellen Van Looy, as usual, is right there in the mix for the entire race, pushing everyone hard, which is really cool. But it's also a name that we used to say more. It's good to see again. Is Pavla Havlikova.
Yeah, I agree.
And not just because her name's fun to say, but I mean, it's nice to see her racing so strong again.
Yeah, and is she one of those racers that just seems, and I know Ellen Van Looy too, she seems like she's been there forever, doesn't it? It's just so cool. It's like it's just like we've gotten to watch her race forever. And I agree, David, I always like seeing her in there. So I hope she gets a win at some point this year, a big win like she did last year. So
yeah,
and now that we know how to say Maud Captains, it makes it so much easier.
It does.
It does.
Even though I noticed Scott tried to slip a J in there still.
I kind of, well, you know, yeah, the J is silent. I know, but you got to like, I'm trying to have my accent. That's what it is.
Interesting comment from Kant at the end of this race. And I think it's one that I really like seeing from her, and is something that reminds me of racers like Sven. She said that it was a technical course, but not a technically difficult course. So it was hard to make a difference. So
there was
not a high enough level of technical skill necessary on that course. So she wasn't able to really get away from that group using those skills, which is the same that Sven used to say. He wants the course, you know, technically as hard as it possibly can be, because that plays to his strengths.
Yeah, then you can use those spots to create gaps. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. For the elite men in this race, in first place, proving he is truly a sight to behold, Matthew Vanderpool. In second place, Wout Van Aert. In third place, David got that. In third place, Lauren Sweek. In fourth place, Kevin Powles. And in fifth place, Corne Van Kessel. Americans in 14th was Stephen Hyde, and in 26th place was Eric Thompson. Bill, you didn't get my reference there.
Oh, what?
Truly a sight to behold.
Truly a sight to behold.
Truly a sight to behold. So when should I just be working on the TDD TIE t-shirts with language lessons?
I think so.
Go for it.
From a man who knows how to ski.
So Vanderpool again, just off to the races in this one from the beginning, what I was, you know, alluding to before about when I cut off David was that it was, you know, he was ahead for 50 minutes and it was tough to, you know, mentally be out there, but that's kind of what it was. An interesting note from Wout on this race, in that he said that when Vanderpool made his move, he was in a bad position. He wasn't in a place where he could follow right away. So that gap was created. And then in his post-race analysis, from that point on, his lap times and Vanderpool's lap times were constant. So this is his way of explaining away Vanderpool being that much stronger, in that it was really just an unlucky or bad positioning on his part that Vanderpool was able to get away. But from that point on, you know, there really wasn't much difference. Of course, as we were mentioning before, once you get that big lead, Vanderpool is sort of on cruise control. So who knows if he's really pushing as hard as he possibly can.
Yes, I completely agree. And I think his gap actually by the end was much smaller than it was, and it was because of the fact that he was kind of you know, riding more tempo pace than really pushing real hard. And that could have been the cause of that. So, but again, I still agree with Wild. It's no reason to panic. A lot of stuff can happen. This is only two races this weekend. And I know, you look at the whole Vanderpool is, since he's been back, has been maybe the better of the two. But this, again, you can say the same thing about last year. So lots of stuff that can still happen.
And to follow up on that, you look at Wout and why the gap was a little shorter is that at a certain point in the race, and this is what we love about cyclocross, that it's just not about the winner, is that, him, Wout van Aert and Lauren Swick and the rest of those guys in that chasing group stopped being the chasing group. They stopped looking ahead and they started looking behind and they started racing each other. So, Swick and van Aert had a good battle at the end of that race for a second place.
Yeah. And just like we mentioned with Tom Ewson, I got to give Lauren Swick props for the way he was racing there at the end against Wout. I mean, I thought that was very impressive. And again, like we said, because anything can happen, these guys can all be there at Worlds. No question about it with what can happen. So,
I think Swick's maturity level has come a lot, has come through this season in his strength middle and end of the race, not just railing it from the get-go and seeing how long he can hold on.
Yes. Yep. Agreed. Totally.
There's some, and another, there's some bad metaphor in there about, graduating from baby food to grown-up food.
What?
Okay.
Where does that
go? I don't know where that translates from, but
I'm just going to cut this out, but the whole baby food with Lauren Swick and the doping,
okay. Yes. Yeah. All right. Now I get it.
All right.
Also, for the entire weekend.
Need a pause there?
For editing. But no, now you got to leave it in now that we got it. For the entire weekend, Wout did not drop a chain.
Yeah.
That we know of.
Right.
So that's good.
Oh, was it you that sent them the K-Edge chain keeper or what?
All right. Now, one of the big things that happened because it's gotten bigger than it actually was, because it happened right in front of the cameras, was the pushing and shoving match that happened. Bill, why don't you take it away and talk about that for a minute?
All right. So we have Vinny Bastens versus Jens Adams in the super lightweight division.
I was going to say, I love how you said versus.
So they're going into one of these tricky turns that we're talking about. There's a lot of dips and things in there, which makes it fun to watch. It's a pretty big pack. Jens Adams gets in there first, gets a little sideways. And while he's doing that, Vinny is trying to pass him on the left. Adams takes a little umbrage to that, afterwards saying he didn't think it was a good place to be passing and sort of gives him a soft elbow. And at the end of it, you can see his hand sort of flick up. And this is the part, this is great because it's like this is a Pruder film. You could break it down frame by frame, but they're just leaving the frame while this is happening. And it's cropped where you can't really see exactly, but you sort of see these fingers fly up towards Vinny's face. As they make that turn, and then and then they're sort of out of frame, and then back in frame, they're next around the next turn, and then all of a sudden, both of them are just down on the ground in a crump, this pile of bikes and bodies. Both of them just go down. Who knows?
And it was on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah, and who knows what caused what or who caused what, but definitely after the first altercation, Vinny got up and pushed Jens Adam down. He got up again, looked like he was going to hit him, pushed him again into the fencing. The crowd is going wild. The referee is trying to get in there to, no, actually there's no referee. Adams actually gets up, gets into Vinny's face, points at him a little bit, and then they both go on their merry way. Adams really didn't do anything except in the fighting instance, except get pushed over.
Yeah.
It's always more interesting to watch fighting in cyclocross racing than in road racing, because the shoes allow them to stand up and square off against each other.
Yeah, you definitely can get some. You get a good stance. You're able to transfer transfer your weight and really, you know, get into the blow. Yeah,
get that push in there real solid. Yeah.
So
go ahead.
No, I was just say that both. Well, Vinny quit. And then was later DQ'd. Adams finished 12th and then also DQ'd. Is upset that he got DQ'd since he really didn't do any of the fighting part. The jury, I think, looked at that first elbow finger flick and were basing their DQ on that contact.
He, but, he got the instigator penalty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I think he kind of said I was just telling him to come around.
Yeah, right.
And I was... I was saying, you know, hold your line. Hold your line, man.
So, you know, in the end, Vinny went on to Facebook where we, you know, solve all of our disputes. No raised tempers or people going crazy on Facebook. It's all control, and that's what you do. And apologized for his behavior and... you know, he of course says, he was basically jumped by Jens Adam. You know, he says, after the contact by Jens Adam, my counter reaction was not right, but in the heat of the battle, I let myself carry away. And he accepts the punishment and then, Jens,
I thought it was a pretty good response. He took total responsibility, said, I'll take whatever punishment they give me. And, you know, that'll be the end of it where this won't carry on and be any big thing after this.
It's knowing Vinny Bastains, you think this is something that you would expect from him?
I don't know. I don't know him that well.
Okay, well, let me tell you about 2014 when him and he went to a vacation in Florida and got into a bar brawl.
Oh,
it's funny you're about that. To say that. I do remember that.
Yeah, me too.
Where he was jumped by five Americans because he did nothing at all except was out with his girlfriend and his aunt, and just because he was the foreigner, that's why he was the only one arrested.
Right, I'm sure.
Yeah. So. There's a.
If you told that story now, I'd be more inclined to believe it.
So I will say that when I saw who was involved in this, I was not surprised.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, his response. Maybe he's, you know, learned to try and control that a little bit. His response on Facebook, you know, like you said, is more of a you know that. A sign that he's getting over that and won't do that. So we'll see. We'll see.
The one missing part that we don't have in this story is that in 2014, Bastains made it perfectly clear that when this altercation happened, he was not drunk. We did not get that same clarification for the comet race.
So that could have been a factor. We don't know. Yeah.
But if you guys like our page six gossip version of this, you can just go to hln.be or actually just search that in Google and Vinny and fight, and it'll come up eventually.
It's on there.
Yeah.
There was wheel grab in this instance.
There's no wheel grab either. No.
No.
No. Okay. They don't do that in Europe.
No. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I was going to say, if you want to hear the version of that fight how it relates to the American version with Adam Iverson and Jonathan Baker, you can just go listen to the Slow Ride podcast.
Slow Ride. They go into that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good idea. Good idea. Anything else about the men we want to cover? I think we covered it pretty well. Let's talk about upcoming stuff. What do we got coming up? We got Masters Worlds is very soon, right?
Yeah, Mark Savory already over there. Tweeting and Instagram all of the great places that he's visiting. I will say that speaking of things upcoming, because there was a question about it, there has now been an official announcement from Kokesida that because of all of the races are happening, that it will not be rescheduled. So you know, there was a little bit of talk about if they were going to try to squeeze it in December, but that is completely off the table now. The pattern
is full. The official announcement came out. Yep. So All right. Well, yeah, we got Masters Worlds. And then, of course, this weekend is our three-race UCI weekend here in the U.S. We've got Ruts and Guts in Oklahoma. That is the C1 on Saturday with a C2 on Sunday. We've got NBX in Rhode Island, which is a double C2. And then right in the middle, we got Major Taylor in Indianapolis, which is also a double C2. So big weekend UCI-wise in the U.S. Stuff spread out all over. We're going to see people, racers all over the place that are still in the U.S. So it should be a good weekend of racing. I personally am going to the Indianapolis race, to the Major Taylor race. Always a favorite of mine. I think I've been the last 2 years. This will be three in a row for me. Always a fun race. It's a smaller venue on, right near Marion University. You're at the Major Taylor Velodrome. So you can, they usually aren't out racing on it, but you can still go check it out. Velodromes are just always kind of cool to see. And that whole bike complex that they have there at Marion. So, always a favorite of mine. And, we will be racing there. What do you guys have planned cyclocross wise for this weekend? Anything? Bill?
Oh, me. Yeah, I have two races. Red Shedman, which is a race and a beer festival. So that will be good, announcing that race on Saturday. And then on Sunday, one of my favorite races, the Cap Cross Classic at Lake Fairfax Park in Reston, Virginia, which is a race that has been around forever. It was at one point a UCI race, and now it's just back down to our series, yet it's the same course and same amazing features and always a great time. So if you're hearing this now, you're in the Mid-Atlantic region or the East Coast or anywhere, I want to go do a great race, local race, come hang out, have fun. I'll be announcing there. Go get on Bike Ridge and register for Capital Cross Classic.
Yeah, very cool. David, what are your plans?
Hey, locally here is La Frost Cross up there in Mount Pleasant. I won't be there. But we do have our Sunday dirt road ride, real low-key, not your racer ride. But we've been getting some, I wouldn't say crowds, but people have been coming up. We've had some number of people coming up from Ohio. So I know we've got some OVCX listeners down that way. If you're interested, come on up. Join us for the dirt road rides. Real real unofficial, real laid back. Look for it on the Ann Arbor Velo Club Facebook page. That's where I usually post stuff.
Get that prep work in for the Waterloo Grit and Gravel.
And we will be doing once a month dirt road rides on the Waterloo Grit and Gravel course, which opens December 1st. I'm not sure if it's yet December 1st when you're listening to this. But, yeah, epicraces.com. Look for that Waterloo Grit and Gravel race. We already have started some pre-reg sales. We had a event that kind of a little meet and greet that we do at the Wolverine State Brewing Company locally here in Ann Arbor, where people can buy races before they actually officially open. But December 1st, that race will open. Sure to be a sellout again this year. For those of you into dirt, I know that there's talk of a certain Scott Terman's going to be racing this year, as well as Mr. Scotty D himself. Come on out.
Yeah, and then the next big race we got coming up December of the three big series that we kind of focus on the show, December 10th, is the DeVeve race at Essen. So that's got what we got coming up in Europe-wise. So, all right, guys, I think we covered it. Anything else you want to mention?
We got more
Bill,
mail.
Bill, where can people...
We got more mail.
Okay.
You're ending this all. We got more mail.
I thought you worked them all in, man. Yeah, let's do the mail for sure.
I think we do. I was
like
trying to actually,
highlight.
I didn't look for the rule. This is from Josh McKinney, one of our friends out at Trek Bikes. He wanted to know about Steven and Katie both wearing the Pan Am kits as opposed to, at least for Katie, her national kit. And if there has been a rule change.
I don't know if there's been a rule change.
There has, but it seems like. Well, I don't know. I need to look. I should have. For the cyclocross, it just talks about the leader skin suit. I actually need to go back and look at the overall rules for it. I know there was a hierarchy of the kits that you were supposed to wear, and your continental kit is definitely above your national kit. So that is in the rules. But it seems like in the past that that wasn't necessarily always followed.
Yeah, and there's things you can do to request exceptions to that list, right? Like like we were talking about, I think, in Rochester way at the beginning of the season, Ellen Noble, as the U23 national champ, because the elite national champion of Katie Compton was not in the race, she could petition to wear the national champion as the U23 champion in that same race and got approved and was able to wear it for that. So there's things you can do to request that you are allowed to wear a jersey that's not necessarily in that hierarchy. So I don't know if something like that has happened or exactly why this is the year all of a sudden they were both wearing the Pan Am jerseys. So who knows?
All right.
David, do you know?
I do not. Wow.
All right.
Okay.
So we can try and find out.
Yeah. Josh also was the one asking about Thanksgiving weekend. I think we covered that one. Simon Denton, who was the one asking about Sagan. So we covered that. Somebody wanting to correct us. Not somebody. Doug. Doug wanting to correct us on our pronunciation of Lane Meyer, which we're just not going to do.
No, we understand. It's Maher, but we like Meyer. We got to get him on.
And as I responded to this to Doug, and he understands in jest, but just want to make sure we knew, was that Lane Meyer should feel honored that we are elevating him and his name to the same position as all of the Belgian and Dutch pros, in that we are mangling his name with as much,
it is a badge of honor.
Exactly. It's in reverence, you know, so.
You know, Christmas. Sorry.
All right, Bill, anything else?
Yeah, you can get in touch with me at CXHairs on Twitter and Instagram. And if you want to send any questions so I can interrupt Scott at the end of the next show, you can do that at feedback@CXHairs.com. Also, everybody should join the Wide Angle Podium Network. Go to wideanglepodium.com. You can check out the Slow Ride Cyclocross podcast and get all the updates on the stuff that we're also talking about, but get their special take on it. Honest Bicycle Program, really been enjoying that one. They've gone out and they're grabbing interviews at races, really up in their game. I know it's something to aspire to. Consummate athlete. They just all kinds of cool stuff on there, from NASCAR drivers to golfers to you name it, and us. So go become a member, and then you might get some cool swag.
Absolutely. David.
Mr. David Palin, come find me on the internet. I'm awake. I've been awake this whole time. Contrary to what
can
Mr.
you tell,
JB
it's David's day
me.
Off today.
Yeah,
I know why, and it's because we're recording in the morning, right?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. And as always, you can find me, Scott Dienbach, at CyclocrossNet on Twitter is usually the best place to tweet me, and I will get back with you there. Guys, another great show. You guys have a great weekend. We got good racing coming up, so that's going to be cool. And we'll probably do this again in a week or so, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. I have one special episode possibly planned for next week, but that doesn't mean we can't do this also.
Excellent. So we will see what happens with that. People don't understand. They're actually listening to the actual planning of the show. Even
they
this
are.
Is how we plan. This is everything we do right here.
They are.
That's
this
it.
Is the behind the scenes show.
Yeah, that's our plan right there.
Thankfully,
so,
they didn't get the 30 minutes behind the scenes show before. Although I think a lot of that might have been good stuff that we just
they would have
left on the cutting room table. But I think that we would also have been in trouble.
We'd be hearing from people's attorneys.
All right, guys, talk to you again soon.
Bye. All right, there you have it. Another episode of They Don't Do That in Europe. Hey, as a quick follow-up, let's call it an addendum, to what we just talked about with the order of priority for kits, I went back and actually did find the rule that I couldn't find just moments ago. It is 1.3.071. Comes under Section 9, which is Order of Priority. This is in the UCI Rules and Regulations. And I'll just read it all to you. This is without prejudice to relevant provisions, but applicable for all disciplines, should various provisions requiring the wearing of different jerseys apply to the same rider, the order of priority shall be as follows. First, the leader's jersey of the stage race. Yeah, not applicable to cyclocross yet. Someday? Who knows? Okay, second, the leader's jersey of the Cup Series or UCI classification. Third, the World Champions jersey. Fourth, the Continental Champions jersey. And here is the important parenthetical. It says not mandatory as per 1.3.070. Under that, number five, the National Champions jersey. Number six, the National jersey. So then let's look above that rule. We go to Section 8, which is the Continental Champions jersey. That's Rule 1.3070. And it says, if a jersey is awarded at a Continental Championship, the rider may wear it in all races in the discipline, specialty, and category in which he won the title, and for as long as he continues to hold the title. Operative word there is may, does not say must. But wait, there's new language that came in for the second paragraph. Continental confederations may impose the mandatory wearing of their Continental Champions jersey in the discipline, specialty, and category of their choosing. So the question is, does the North American Confederation mandate that its champions wear the jersey? I'm not sure. If they do, that's why Hyde and Katie are both wearing it. If not, it's just their choice. And then it goes on to talk about authorized advertising shall be identical to those on World Champions jerseys. Before production, the Continental Champion jersey's design, colors, flag, drawing, reproduced by the titled rider must be approved by the concerned Continental Confederation and must respect the latter's disposition. Wearing the Continental Champions jersey is prohibited as soon as the Anti-Doping Commission, after the review described in Article 7.2 of the Anti-Doping Rules, asserts that the rider committed an anti-doping violation and until the definitive acquittal. So, there you have it. That's probably more than you ever wanted to know about Order of Priority and Continental Champions jerseys. What it looks like is that they have the ability to wear the jersey if they want to. If the federation says that they have to, then they have to. All right. Thanks for listening. Thank you to Cantu Wheels for once again sponsoring this episode. Go visit them at cantuwheels.com. Also, thanks to Bike Kinetic Cross. Search for Bike Kinetic BikeNetix, like Kinetic Cross. And we will see you all out there December 11th on the Pirate Ship. All right, until next time.